And welcome once again to Capital Watch, where we keep an eye on what's happening under the Capitol Dome in Harrisburg for you. I'm your host, David Taylor, president and CEO of the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association. With me in the studio, I have your Capital Watch All-Stars from the Pennsylvania Motor Truck Association, president and CEO, Rebecca Euler. Rebecca, thanks so much for being here.
Glad to be here again, David. Thank you.
And as ever, my main man, Steve Bloom, the vice president of the Commonwealth Foundation. Steve, great to be with you.
David, it's a pleasure to be here.
Well, I don't know where to even to begin. For the listeners who've been with us for the last several programs, we are stuck in the same place. It is 100 days now past the constitutional deadline for the state budget. Governor Shapiro is AWOL. He's mostly on out-of-state fundraising trips. And it seems as though there is no news and really kind of no urgency behind rectifying what is supposed to be the first and most central duty of state government, which is passing a budget.
Yeah, and it seems, David, I've been following this closely, and I've been watching since June 30th when the budget should have been enacted,
yes.
the official deadline. 3 months flew by, and now we're into October, almost halfway through October already. And I've called October so far the ships passing in the night phase of the impasse. For a while, for those first few months, there was a lot of talk about, oh, we're very close, we're getting close to a budget, we're talking every day, our staffs are talking, we're going to get a budget done any day. There was a lot of that rhetoric, like they're really interested in getting it all done. But in October, it just seems like the chambers came in, gaveled in, did some work that they wanted to do. Both sides of the aisle did this, both ends of the building, the Senate and the House, both had session days, but they didn't really do anything pertaining to the budget and didn't really say much about the budget. And it's almost as if now both sides have simply decided to do other things and just send each other bills that have passed one chamber but haven't been negotiated or agreed upon.
Right.
And so that's kind of changed the dynamic a little bit. It's not helping. Now, in some cases, they did move bills that were key bills that are vehicle bills to be used later for parts of the budget.
Mm-hmm.
So that did happen. So those are sitting there. If and when there's a deal, those bills can be utilized. But meanwhile, it is just like ships passing in the night. It doesn't seem like they're really talking on the level that they were several months ago. And they're just kind of going about their own business. And I don't know if they're starting to feel the heat. But as you suggested, there are this is the time in a budget crisis in Pennsylvania when the heat really starts to impact at the county level. In particular with county human services needs. So
you're
going to see the lawmakers, I think, on both sides of the aisle getting a little bit more, I don't know, enthused about getting a compromise done that's worthy and protects the people of Pennsylvania from future tax increases and deals in a fair way with human services needs and so forth.
Right. And because that's the thing that's, I think, at the heart of the dilemma is that the governor's budget proposal seeks to spend many thousands of millions of dollars beyond what the Commonwealth actually brought in receipts. And again, that would be dangerously destabilizing to go that much further out on the limb, knowing that we can't pay the bill come next year.
Right. I think that is the heart of the disagreement that we've had for the past couple of months is the governor's budget proposal, I believe, if I remember way back then, was about 51.4 billion dollars, if I remember correctly, with the Commonwealth expected to bring in somewhere around 48 billion, somewhere thereabouts. So he was proposing a budget that would have had a significant deficit. So the conversation is then, how do you make up for that deficit? And the Commonwealth has a rainy day fund. So
it's the emergency fund.
Exactly. Yes. So, and that's where we are, is the conversation about where that money would come from if the budget were set at a number greater than the Commonwealth would bring in. And
yeah.
I know the Republicans in the Senate are not keen on using the emergency funds, like you said, for balancing the budget.
Yeah.
So that is
to patch things over one last time when knowing that the bottom will fall out the year after.
Right. And we talk a lot on the show about what kind of permanent solutions we'll need to grow the economy in Pennsylvania, which of course is the ultimate solution to increasing tax revenues and building the economy and growing jobs and that sort of thing. So I know the General Assembly is discussing what types of solutions might be required to do that. And it's come to a head now in the General Assembly, is let's have those conversations now before we get too far down the road of spending us into debt. Yeah. So that's essentially, in a nutshell,
that's
where we are.
Where we are. One of the biggest turns in this whole drama has been the leadership of State Treasurer Stacey Garrity, that she is using her authority as State Treasurer to offer loans to the counties and I'm sure eventually to it hasn't happened yet, but eventually the school districts when they start to squawk about them being underfunded. But that I thought that was a very bold move on her part, and that I think, again, it speaks to the quality of Treasurer Garrity's leadership, that she has never been and will never be passive. She doesn't wait for stuff to happen. She makes things happen. And seeing this crisis and seeing how her agency could help to bridge between now and whenever this thing gets settled, that was something that put her at the center of attention.
And I think it's important, and when we talk about the personalities involved, that there are leaders emerging.
Yes.
And we've hoped from the sidelines that the governor would step into that bully pulpit role of getting all the sides to talk seriously and reach compromise, which ultimately is how every budget impasse is solved. The budget, the governor has a lot of clout in that process, but in this case, using the bully pulpit that he is afforded by being governor of the Commonwealth, but in this case, the governor hasn't really done that. He hasn't stepped in that kind of way, and it seems like he's just busy doing his own campaigning things and whatever else he does, but not really getting in there and knocking heads with the legislative leaders on a regular basis. So seeing someone like Stacey Garrity, who's in a position to do something, actually do something proactively, no one was asking
yes.
her to do this. She figured out, hey, here's a way I can stabilize the impact of this impasse in a way that doesn't hurt Pennsylvanians.
Right.
And I can help them get through this in a more solid fiscal condition.
Yeah.
So definitely kudos to her for doing that and setting that example of leadership that's productive and helpful so the real issues can be discussed. And by all means, the budget impasse is important in terms of the key issues, as Rebecca said, have to do with the spending and the fact that the governor's proposed spending level was so far off from the revenues. Talking about forcing a situation where the reserves and the emergency fund would be used up in order to make that ground up. And then the other alternative that's left after you've done that, if you need resources, you've got to go back to the people with a tax increase.
Right. And the cynic in me looks on this whole thing and I can't get rid of the thought that the governor wants the spigot all the way open this year and next year to try to juice the economy to be more popular and to help him with his reelection bid as governor, which, again, of course, politicians are ambitious and want to be successful. But the best way to be successful, in my opinion, is to do a good job and earn the support from the voters for that rather than smoke and mirrors and grandstanding and all that other stuff. You're listening to Capital Watch. I'm your host, David Taylor from Pennsylvania Manufacturers. With me, Rebecca Euler from the Pennsylvania Motor Truck Association and Steve Bloom from the Commonwealth Foundation. And it's starting to feel different. And please weigh in with your views on this. It's been past 100 days that the governor seems disengaged and that the Senate R's know what they want. The House D's are not going to give ground on what they want, which is how we find ourselves at stalemate. So, Steve, you and I attended the Pennsylvania Chamber annual dinner just a few nights ago, and that Governor Shapiro was in attendance and that he was given the opportunity to speak. And it was a strange scene. Do you want to take a shot at describing it?
Sure. We're in a... Keep in mind, a banquet hall.
Yes.
In Hershey, PA, and about 1,500 individuals there. So it's a wide swath of individuals from around Pennsylvania, many of whom either work for or are part of a business entity that is a member of the Pennsylvania Chamber of
Business and Industry.
Business and Industry. And so you think they would be, and they are generally, a well-behaved, interested audience. But I noticed that as Governor Shapiro began his speech, after maybe a minute or so of people kind of listening as if they were like, who's that? What are they talking about? it seemed like the crowd just tuned him out and started talking amongst itself.
Yes.
And there was, it was loud.
It was a din.
And I was attempting to listen to what the governor was trying to say, and I had to strain just to hear him over the din of the crowd, the noise, the laughs, the people still standing up, greeting each other, not taking it, treating it as if an important person who had a lot of impact on people's lives was going to say some important things. It was more like, oh, there's that guy, and carried on their conversation. It was not like anything that I've seen at the chamber dinner in the past.
Yes.
Nor have I seen that really toward any strongly powerful person holding a position like governor of the Commonwealth, just being treated with sort of indifference.
Yeah, and that was the very thought, the indifference of the people there to what the governor had to say. And his remarks, if you've been following him at all, he's got some boilerplate type things that he always turns to, and I think that perhaps that initial moment of listening was for, is he going to say something different? Like, is he going to make news here? Is he going to bring us something that's meaningful about the situation that we're in? And I think that when people heard some of the same tired rhetoric from the governor, that was when they just tuned out. It was weird. And again, you don't want to read too much from just one incident, but I mean, is it possible that Pennsylvania's leadership cadre, both public sector and private sector, that they're just tired of the governor? I mean, that would be a real hit below the waterline for him because, of course, you know, he's got very grand plans and ambitious, and certainly he takes himself very, very seriously. And I think that what is the old saying, that the opposite of love isn't hate, the opposite of love is indifference? And that may be where the governor finds himself.
It may be. I don't know. It's a strange phenomenon. And he is, the times I've seen him speak, he does use a lot of notes. He stays very close to his script. And it's the kind of thing where you wonder, is he afraid that if he doesn't use the notes, he'll veer off into saying, I don't know what it means. It's odd, because if you ever had an opportunity to give sort of the same speech in multiple locations over a number of days and weeks, as I did when I was running for office, for example, back in the early 2000s, your elevator pitch, your short pitch of describing things just becomes very natural.
Right. You learn it.
You don't need a card in your hand anymore, even if you did to begin with, which there's nothing wrong with. You can certainly use a card or a prompter if you have one. But at some point, a lot of this stuff becomes second nature, and you just sort of can recite it. I don't know why that's not happening, why he's still sticking so close to the written script.
It did seem at that particular event that he had a script, and that more than presenting assisted by notes, that he seemed as though he was reading it. Which was, again, different for him. I don't know. Maybe he's tired from all of his out-of-state fundraising trips.
Well, to be fair, too, this was a crowd that was looking forward to seeing Shaquille O'Neal a little later, too, right?
Yeah. I mean, okay, anybody would have a charisma gap with Shaq.
Right? That's what I was thinking.
But again, this is supposed to be the serious business of governing. And I said it earlier in the program that developing and enacting a budget is the baseline activity of any organization, whether you're a Kiwanis Club or a volunteer fire company or whatever. Like, having the budget is the minimal first step to responsible governance. And the fact that the Commonwealth doesn't have a spending plan, that we are 100 days beyond the constitutional deadline.
And I might point out, we're the only state without a budget yet.
Yes, yeah. Yes. So 49 other states have shown better self-governance than we have.
Well, I know you had mentioned earlier, David, does something feel different? And the first thing that popped into my mind is sort of defeated. I personally sort of feel kind of defeated. Like, here we are again, no budget, it's late. And I say that from the standpoint of an association that we're trying to get some things done in the legislature.
Right.
We have some bills that we want to see passed. We have some hearings we were hoping to be a part of. We have some things that we want to get done. And the legislature just is non-functional. I mean, like Steve said, they are doing some perfunctory things. They're getting some things done that are high priorities to them that are sort of minor. But there are real things the legislature should be accomplishing right now that just are not going to happen. And it's really frustrating. And I just feel kind of defeated.
Yeah.
Like, there are things that the legislature could be working on that they're just not going to happen.
Yeah, we're supposed to be better than this.
Yeah, yeah.
We're supposed to be better than this. And as a self-governing people, through our elected representatives and the elected executive and his cabinet officers, we're supposed to be able to grapple with problems. And we're supposed to be able to come up with workable solutions. And when the whole system is gridlocked, then, just speaking to your frustration, Rebecca, that none of those other ancillary problems are even addressed, because the big primary problem of just setting the baseline of how much are we going to take from the private economy, how much are we going to spend, and how are we going to spend it, that those questions remain unanswered for now.
And I think one of the things the governor notes frequently is that this is the only state with a divided legislature. It's a purple state that he's governing, and there is a divided legislature. And he uses that a lot, and
yeah.
I hate to say it as an excuse, but it kind of is.
Well, but it blows my mind, Rebecca. He talks that talk to say, hey, this has all got to be addressed between the 40-yard lines. And then he goes and does something crazy,
right,
like proposing spending billions of dollars that we don't have when we're already – our economy isn't nearly as robust as it ought to be, and that other states are pulling away with their economic competitiveness. And that like, why is this the hill he wants to die on?
Right. And I think it comes back to what we were talking about earlier, is leadership, because this is exactly the circumstance where people crave leadership and where, for the good of the country and the state, we really need effective leaders to really bridge the gap when we have issues like this, when we have a divide like this, and we just are lacking it right now. So I think this is a perfect example of why we really need strong leaders and why it's so frustrating that we don't have it.
And by a strong leader, I mean, Rebecca, I would suggest, you know, the power of conviction,
yeah,
and clarity that Abraham Lincoln once said that it is common to encounter great facility of language. It is less common to encounter great lucidity of thought. But where you have both in one person, there you have a great leader. And that this is what we really need. We need clarity of thought, a clear agenda with leaders who explain what their goals are, how they intend to get there, and why their policy proposals are the way to get that done. And then and the other side needs to do the same. And then we can go one by one, match these things up, see how much of it we can agree to, maybe not much, but at least then there'll be some kind of common ground and some kind of way forward. But when there's no engagement in terms of actually interacting with people, having a reality-based conversation, like not spending billions of dollars that we don't have, it is a very uncomfortable place to be. So anyway, we have every hope that next program will be able to talk about something other than the Shapiro shutdown. But for the time being, this is where we are, which is why we're, again, just telling it the way it is. We're down to the end of our time. Steve, where can people go to learn more about you and what you do?
They can visit CommonwealthFoundation.org.
Okay. And Rebecca, where can people learn more about the Pennsylvania Motor Truck Association?
They can find us at PMTA.org.
Outstanding. And as ever, you can find me online at PAManufacturers.org. From Steve and Rebecca and me, thanks so much for listening, and we will catch you next time on Capital Watch. And now, a town hall commentary from Loman Henry.